I'm Jody. I'm an alcoholic. And about 20 to 7, I was at the church on exit 16. I really needed a meeting, and I thought that I knew there was one there on Monday. And I called my sponsor, and he said, "No, but there's one at the firehouse, and Frog is speaking." And I got here, and Danny says, "I don't know if the speaker is going to show up." And I said, "I spoke a while back. I was in a really bad place, and I needed to speak then. I'm in a good place now, but I could use. I'm grateful that Danny allowed me this opportunity." I was recently granted guardianship of one of my adult children after being 10-13 four times in 3 weeks. A judge in Cherokee County saw fit to make me his guardian, and I had to commit him to a state mental facility. 4 years ago today, my daughter, who was 11 at the time, had brain surgery. And today I had a talk with her doctor. My 17-year-old son is showing symptoms of what caused my daughter to have brain surgery. And I'm at an AA meeting. Never been more grateful to be sober in my life, man. I'm telling you. I have a charmed life. AA has not only given me a life, but it's given me the ability to participate. And my son in the state mental facility isn't liking me too much right now. I told him he has one father and a bunch of friends, and what he needs me to do is be his father. And he can hate me all he wants. And my 17-year-old son, I'm keeping him close, talking to him. He's scared. He don't know, you know, what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. And I get to tell him, well, don't project. You know, let's say the serenity prayer. You know, he's grown up in AA. My sobriety date is November 6, 2002. He was 3 when I got sober, and my daughter was 2. So they have no recollection of me being under the influence of alcohol. What a wonderful thing. Oh, and this week I have my 17-year-old grandson who's decided to start using meth staying at my house. And life is grand. I say that and I mean it. You know, I took my grandson to a CA meeting a couple weeks ago and introduced him to all the guys on Friday night. And I paid him today, and I told him if he uses dope in my house, I'm going to beat his ass. Wait till his mom comes home and give her all the grief, not me. And he agreed to do that, so I think we're going to be okay. I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, August 28, 1963. That's the same day that Martin Luther King Jr. made the I Had a Dream speech. And I pointed that out to my mother once, and she said he had a dream and I had a nightmare. You know? And so I've never talked about that with her again. I was a fourth of 5 children. Grew up in the ghetto, lived in the ghetto, went through the riots in the late 60s. Was bused with the African-American students to the white schools. And it was bad in this neighborhood. We used to have people meet us at our home and walk us to school so that we didn't get jumped or beat up. And these were by adults, you know. So that's kind of what I grew up in. My father was transferred to Fremont, Ohio in 1971. He got drunk and pulled a gun on a whole bar. And beat the hell out of my mother, and the cops beat the hell out of him, and he made a deal with them that he would leave Fremont, Ohio, and never come back, and nobody would press charges on anybody. My father would tell me as I got older, he said his motto was, when you're right, you fight, and when you're wrong, you negotiate. And that's what he did. He negotiated his way out of probably going to prison. Moved to Youngstown, Ohio, back into what we call the hood today. It was a rough blue-collar neighborhood, and I started drinking and smoking dope when I was 9 years old. By the time I was in 6th grade, was committing some crimes, you know, low-level crimes, stealing, B&Es, and stuff like that. Was a little hippie. I had blonde hair about down to here, and walked through the neighborhood like I was something. When I was 14... I was arrested and charged with two counts of attempted murder. It's not something I talk about a lot, but it's something I feel like I should share. It was a crime I didn't commit, and I would ultimately be cleared of that, but the effect that it had on me and the rest of my life was profound in a very negative way. I was removed from school without my parents knowing, locked up with detectives for about 7 or 8 hours, and at the end of 7 or 8 hours, they had a signed confession saying I did it, and I didn't do it. I won't go into what happened in those 7 or 8 hours. I tell you, they have specials on 2020 about that shit. It happened, and my father stuck behind me, and we got a lawyer, and we ultimately beat the charges. But it left me one angry young man, very angry. And I remember I spent the night at a friend's house when I was probably about 16 at the time, and his mother was a bar hopper. She was in a biker gang. And she came home and saw that I was in the house, and she said, "Get that murdering little son of a out of my house." And I jumped out of a window and went for a walk, and I cried, had a joint, remember, sitting on the tracks. And I made some decisions about how I was going to live my life. My mother and father were Pentecostal evangelists, so I grew up with the Bible being force-fed. And I sat on those tracks for quite a while, and I made some decisions, like God was out of my life. You know, if he made this happen or let it happen, my mother tried to explain, he didn't make it happen, he let it happen. I said, well, it doesn't matter to me which one it was. And just decided, you know, I wasn't going to let anybody in. And if anybody gave me any shit, I was going to give them shit back, because that was never going to happen to me again. And one thing I found out about in my neighborhood, when they think you shot a couple people and got away from it, you can talk shit to just about anybody you want to and get away with it. And I did. I used it as a way of making people think I was something I wasn't. Someone get something out of it, and no one would ever fight me. I didn't have to fight after that again, and I knew why, you know, and I would make them think, if you did, that might happen to you. You know, I got sick with it, very sick with it. Graduated from high school, went in the military. I was a combat medic. Never saw any combat, but that's what I trained for. Spent a year and a half in Germany. Never left the city I was stationed in. Never left. Drank a lot of beer, a lot of Jägermeister, and smoked a lot of hash. I came back from Germany. I had a cough for about 3 months. I didn't think it was ever going to stop. Anybody that's ever been over there knows about that. Their alcohol and their hash. And I didn't see any of Europe. I did get drunk on a military hot flight one time and ended up in England. And I passed out in the terminal, and they were vacuuming around me in the morning when I woke up. I came to, and two other servicemen kind of picked me up and put me in a chair so they could vacuum, and I laid back down on the floor, and nobody did anything. So I did go to England. I had a ticket that said so. And got married. I came back to the States, and I got stationed out at Fort Benning at the U.S. Army Ranger School. I wasn't a ranger, but I was a combat medic, and those guys in their training, it was as close to a combat situation, you know, simulated combat, the stress, the pressure, as you can get. And I was a medic attached to the training brigade down there. I was on a four-man medic team, and they had the first two phases of ranger school at Fort Benning, and I spent about 15 months out there. Got married to a girl I went to high school with while I was there. She had a baby, a little girl. I adopted her. She's my oldest. I'm the only father she's ever known. She just turned 34. And got out of the Army and went back to Youngstown, Ohio, and had big plans. You know, I had drank all through, you know, high school and the military, and the woman I was married to drank just like I did. we came back, and we just fell into the crowd that we went to high school with. We'd only been out of high school for 3 years. Tried going to Texas. I think everybody that grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, tried going to Texas, you know, to make it work. And we went there, and it was just nothing but a 12-month party. And we just got up and left one day. And we had three more kids pretty quick. They are 31, 28, and 27 now. In 1989, I was in the insurance business. My father recruited me into the insurance business. He had been with this company about 25 years. And I had started stealing money from the company to... they gave me a route. I was one of those insurance agents that came to your house to collect the premiums, if anybody remembers that. And I was an alcoholic and cocaine addict, and I had cash every day. And so I went on about a 3-year alcohol and cocaine binge at this company's expense. And there was, you know, when I first started there, the manager took me out. He said, there's 23 agents, you know, and they had everybody from the top producer down to the bottom producer, and you didn't want your name on the bottom. And that's why they put it out there in the open for everybody to see. And he told me if I kept my name fifth, fourth, third, second, or first, I could do anything I wanted to. And I kept it between third and fifth the whole time I was there. And he knew I was stealing money from that company, and he would cover for me, and we would pay it back. He would keep my checks. We would pay it back. And the whole time I was there, I never fell below fifth. And that's the only reason why, is because, man, I got away with everything I wanted to. And I used to remind him, remember what you told me? You know? And but I kind of got to the point where I thought maybe he couldn't cover me no more because the home office was asking questions. So a friend of mine was doing the same thing. He worked, you know, he worked right beside me. He went to rehab. And they not only kept him working, they gave him the opportunity to pay the money back. They didn't press any criminal charges against him. And so I started going to AA, and then I went into a rehab. And met a guy in rehab that whose father owned several businesses in our city, and they did commercials. And I recognized him from the commercials, and we were just alike. And he got out the day before I did, and he told me where he was going to be. And then he had a big bank account still. And as soon as I got out of rehab, man, I was off and running with that guy. In 1992, it got really bad. I decided to make a change, and I moved to Georgia. Came down here on a Greyhound bus. My brother lived here. And we're house painters. That's not all we've ever done, but we've been doing that since we were kids. And that's what my brother did, and I had some experience at it. I had a wife and four kids in Ohio. She was an active alcoholic and addict, and I was forcing myself to stay clean and sober. I was making $7 an hour in 1992. And I came down here and worked about 80 hours a week. And I was sending home all my money, and you know where it was going. And it got so bad for her that she decided it was time to get back with me, you know, and she came down to Georgia. And so here we are, two active alcoholics and drug addicts and four kids in a little trailer out on Canton Road in Holly Springs. And I just, you know, I came home from work one day, and she was in there drinking with the neighbors, and I said, I can't do this anymore. And went outside. They had a payphone outside the trailer, and got a hold of the Howe place. And I think Stumpy answered the phone. And I went to my first meeting at the Howe place, and met Danny, Mike Cook, a lot of guys. I don't know if Tom was coming around there then, or Logan. I think he came about that time or shortly thereafter. And man, I got a sponsor. I'd been around the program a lot and just never would do what needed to be done, you know. And this time I got a sponsor and started working the steps. My sponsor's name was Sam, real good guy. Nancy was there. Raleigh was there. And and they know Sam, and a very giving guy. And I think I cured him of that, the giving. I stayed sober for about 2.5 years, and I got an attitude at Edgar one day. A lot of you, some of you remember Edgar. You know, Sam had put me in business. He gave me the money to start a painting business, and I did. And in about a year and a half, man, I had people working for me, and I had a different truck, and I was out of the trailer and had my wife and kids somewhere else, and we were separated, but they weren't living in that damn trailer. And I just kind of got too big for my britches, as my mother said. And got mad at Edgar and said, man, I'm done. You know, I'm good. I've got a pocket full of money. I'm not drinking. I'm not doing any dope. Going through a divorce, and I was okay with that at that time. And I'm just going to go buy me a bunch of Emmett Fox books. And I'll just read Emmett Fox, and I'll grow my business, and I'll be the paint king of Georgia. And about a week later, those books came in, and I hadn't been at any AA meetings. And I went home and took a shower and went in the room where I was renting a room from Clay. Some of you remember Clay. I was in a robe. I was feeling real, real good. First book I cracked, it said, if you think you're going to sit home and close your bedroom door and draw your shades and read this book and grow spiritually, you're wrong. I said, damn. Wow. You know, they're not talking to me. It's not a sign that, you know, about a month later, I was drinking. And shortly thereafter, I was doing the other stuff too. And when I drink and do the other stuff, I'm not a nice guy at all. And I do things that I would never do if I wasn't under the influence. And I developed a habit of relieving drug dealers of their drugs without paying for it. And one of them got my wallet once, and my driver's license was in it, and it scared me to death. And I decided to go back to Ohio for about a week. I'd been in the extension and relapsed out of there. And I ended up staying 3 years in Ohio. And my second wife, who I'd met at the Howe Place, Cecilia, some of you know her, she tracked me down in Ohio, and she came up to visit, and she stayed 3 years. And we got married, and we went right to hell together. We went straight to right there. I never met a person that drank like I did. My brother used to just have a fit if he drank with me. It just, I'm a pig when I drink. I'm drinking the amount, the passing out, the, you know, I'm loud, I'm obnoxious, and we drank just alike, and it was love. We were in love, you know. A drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one, you know, that song. And we went into a, I grew up in the hood, so we found, my dad knew this pastor, an African-American pastor, and he built some apartments, and he had him a little rehab and Section 8 going, and, you know, he was getting funded by the state, and he owed my dad a favor, and so he let us stay there. And we stayed clean for a while, and we went to meetings, and we decided to move back to Georgia. There's no way I can stay clean up here. Like I could stay clean in Georgia. And we moved back to Georgia in February of 2001. And as soon as I got here, we got the truck unloaded. I was right back, you know, where I was when I left Ohio. And The last binge I went on was about a 10-week binge. I'd broken my own house twice. Left my wife and kids destitute. We had two children, Cecilia and I did. And it was bad. It was real bad. And went into Ridgeview and got out of Ridgeview. While I was in Ridgeview, I was served with a restraining order. It wasn't because of violence. It was because they had been called so many times by my mother-in-law and come out there, and I was never there, that they deemed I was not worthy to be in that house. So they, in order for my wife to keep the kids, she had to agree to keep me out of their life. And got out of there and went to the Sims house. Right around Christmas, you know. Lived in a van for a while at the Howe place, and go to meetings and go out there and go to sleep. And then it started getting really cold. And Sims and his beautiful wife Susan let me sleep on a couch, and then a bed came open. I was there 8 months. This time I got a sponsor, started working the steps, and that was, I came in November 6, 2002, and I've been sober since. And, well, what a lot of life has happened in the last almost 14 years. And I've learned a lot, probably more about myself in the last 11 months than I have the previous 13 years that I've been sober. Like I say, I had a daughter, I have a daughter who had brain surgery 4 years ago today. And November 15th was her birthday. It was her second day back at school. And she came home and found her mother in an apparent suicide attempt, an overdose. And I've had custody of her and her brother ever since. Found out I have a pedophile in the family. And found out he liked one of my kids a little more than I liked that he liked one of my kids. You know what I mean? And had to deal with that. And had a couple of my sons put me out of their life for 4 years. They're both back in my life. One's in Georgia Regional, one's my business partner. So things that appeared to be really bad have really turned out to be blessings, you know. I met another woman in the program in December of 2010, and we dated for 4.5 years, and it split up several times, but we decided we should get married, and we did. We got married in May of 2015. Yeah, in November of 2015, I ended it rather abruptly. And for the next 4 months, I went through a change that I can only compare it to when I got sober, what I went through. Something I learned, big thing that I've learned going through all that. And we talk about doing the next best right thing. If that doesn't include taking care of yourself, then it's all for naught. You know? I took care of my daughter. I nursed her back to health. This pedophile just happened to be my father. I have a relationship with him today. My sons are back in my life. I took care of all these things, and I thought that because I was taking care of them, that I was okay. And I wasn't. I wasn't talking to a sponsor about it. How did it make me feel? I had a lot of grieving to do. And when I told Susan it was time to leave, it had very little to do with Susan, and I had no idea what was going on. And I spent the next 4 months grieving And I had to get some outside help. And they told me exactly what was going on. You know, they said, you didn't have time to grieve. We grieve when we feel it's okay to grieve. And you've been taking care of a lot of people for a long time. And, you know, you have to take care of yourself. And, you know, we learn that here. You know, I was staying sober. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing dope. And I'm not, I don't feel like I'm a victim. These things happen. It's life, you know. I got sober to participate in life. And a lot of life came. It was, you know, bankruptcy. It was just one thing right after another. I had to bankrupt one of my businesses and start all over. It turned out to be a great thing. But I was able to get a sponsor and start using them. And I looked at my part in that my relationship with Susan. And I was able to make an amends to her, you know, and fully knowing what my part in that was. I've been doing the same thing for a long time, and not even realizing that I'm doing it. And it took another drunk coming over my house and me starting to talk and him saying, let me tell you what I see. And I'm going to tell you, when he told me, and it about knocked me out of my chair. Not that it was so bad. It was just so obvious to everybody but me, I think, you know. And so today, I'm coming up on 14 years sober in November. I've never had 14 years sober in my life. I started drinking when I was 9. So, you know, this is my 5th year in new territory. I celebrated my oldest daughter, my oldest child just turned 34, and we celebrated her birthday, and she said, Dad, I get it. She has 4 kids now. And one of them is the one that's, you know, following in Grandpa's footsteps, I guess you'd say. She's like, I get it. She just came and gave me a big hug and a kiss and said, I get it. I said, you don't need to say no. Need to say anymore. I have a son, my oldest son, Jotty Jr., is my business partner. I have another son. He and his wife have their 3rd kid on the way. They'll have 3 under the age of 3 when this boy is born. She comes from a family of 11, and I have 7, and all together. And so they want a big family. I told them, after about 4, you come talk to me then. You know, you might change your mind. So I have my 7th grandkid on the way. And my 2 youngest kids and none of my grandkids have ever seen me drunk or high. And, you know, it's not even something that's talked about in my family anymore. My first wife sent me a text when I was when I was getting guardianship of our son. And she didn't want me having guardianship of him. And she said, do you think the judge would like to know about your past? And I said, well, why don't we both meet up there and we'll tell him? And I never heard another word from her. You know, I'm not... My past is in my past, and I'm not controlled by it anymore. You know, she used to be able to call me and say those things, and I would just go to pieces, you know. And bought my first bike about a month ago. I decided that I'm just entering a new phase of life, and I'm going to embrace it with a Harley Davidson. And it's a trike. It's a 3-wheeler. I need 3 wheels. I'm having a blast. Got some trips planned. Probably in a couple weeks, I'm going to get up one morning and tell the kids that there's food in the refrigerator. They have cell phones. If they need to contact me, call me. I'll get back with them when I pull over. I'm going to take off for about 5 days. So I don't have a clue where I'm going to go. Yet. I will when I leave. But I have a great life. never been more grateful to be sober than I am right now. And I don't know what's going to go on with my son Friday with the doctor. I have no idea. But I know whatever it is, that if I remain sober, that I can add in a positive way to whatever's going to happen with him. And, you know, my son in the hospital, he's, it's amazing. One day he was happy-go-lucky, everybody's favorite, and the next day he thought he was Jesus Christ. I mean, that's how quick it happened. It's like coming in and flipping that switch. And I don't have experience with schizophrenia. I don't. But being his father and being a sober father and wanting to do for my kid everything I can do, I'm learning a whole lot about it. And went down on Tuesday and met with seven. There's a team of psychiatrists and psychologists and medical doctors. And I learned a lot about what's going on with my son. And you know, these things going on with my kids, there was a time when, you know, in the book when it talks about we know how to get tight, when to get tight, you know, as things happen, we have an obligation, we're supposed to do something, we come on missing. This would be the time that I would do an exit stage left. And I would conduct my business from a hotel room. And I wouldn't answer the phone when my family called. I couldn't do it. And today I can. And if I have any good traits about me today, it's as a result of coming in here and staying sober. About 7 years ago, my two youngest kids and I got involved in martial arts. And we're still involved. When I tested for my first degree black belt after the test, I stood in front of a panel of people that do this for a living. And they said, Mr. Payton, other set aside the black belt, what was your greatest personal achievement over the last 4 years? And I said, I didn't quit. And everybody just got silent. And that's what I can tell you guys tonight. You know, the last 14 years being so, I haven't quit. I haven't done it pretty. I haven't always done it right. I've made a lot of mistakes, but I tell you, I don't know if it's time and sobriety. Maybe time and sobriety and age, we get a little wiser. I'm starting to learn from my own mistakes. And I know where I'm headed today. You know, regardless, Jimmy Egan used to say, I'll close with this, Jimmy Egan used to say that his spirituality was like having a pilot light lit right here. And no matter what happened, what went on around him, it was his goal to keep that pilot light lit. And I understand what he means by that. You know, there's an old gospel song that says, where else would I go but to the Lord? You know, man, I tell you, sometimes the only place I know to go is on my knees. That's not a bad place to go, though. And again, thanks, Danny, for allowing me to volunteer for this. I don't know if anybody else needed this, but I needed it. I was being selfish, I think. I'm going to go home and take a shower and go to bed, get a good night's sleep, wake up tomorrow and do it all again. Thank you.
Thank you.